Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Let's kick off and just chat about monarchs. And does a monarch play an active role within the running of the country? So, and I know, is the monarch involved in the political stance, in the actual governing of the country? You know, what is the divider between the monarch and the prime minister, for example?
Right. So we have a constitutional monarchy in the UK. Monarchy is actually the oldest form of government in the UK. And in a monarchy, the monarch, the queen, or now the king, is actually head of state. And the British monarchy, therefore, is known as that constitutional monarchy. And it means while that sovereign is technically the head of state, the ability to make and to pass legislation still resides with parliamentarians headed up by a prime minister.
Right.
So if there is a role performed by the monarch, and there are very many roles, they are very much customary. They are very much in tribute of various things happening in the country. But the political power still lies, in essence, within that elected parliament headed up by the particular leader of that government of the day, currently the Conservative Party, very recently our new Prime Minister, Liz Truss.
And can the monarch overrule? So could the monarch in a situation overrule a decision by parliament?
Well, in a constitutional monarchy, in essence, it's more a figurehead term, but a figurehead with significant powers from the perspective of the fact that there is a long tradition of certain processes and protocols that have to be followed by the particular government of the day. As you will be aware, just 2 days before Queen Elizabeth sadly passed away last week, she actually swore in essence, the new prime minister. So that was one of her very many significant roles. And there are many roles of that nature. But in essence, the political power still lives with the actual parliament and its particular leader. I mean, there are a number of disadvantages of a monarchy, some might say, in that they can require very young minors to take over if a monarch passes away and there's a immediate right of succession. It's difficult sometimes to stop the power of a monarchy. There's never a guarantee as to its competence. But there are incredible benefits as well to a monarchy, which we particularly in the United Kingdom have witnessed over very, very many decades and centuries. And that is that a monarch tends to unite the people. This has been very evident here in the UK. It seems to bring about more stability. It's not something that's changing constantly every few years. So they can see things through. There's a period of process. There's a period of consideration. Mm-hmm. It's cheaper to run than a republic. It's less corrupt, more trusting. In fact, recently they did a poll, Gary, with regard to a number of the world's leading entities and countries, in fact, where they looked at a corruption situation within those countries, and it showed that out of the top 10 countries where corruption was not problematic, 7 of those actually had a monarchy. That included Denmark, Sweden, Norway, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, and Canada. Obviously, our particular monarch heading up Canada and several others. So that was very interesting. Obviously, it's a job for life, as I said, so it carries on. It tends to make sense. And, you know, there are many, many benefits that we've certainly witnessed, particularly in the 70-plus past years under Queen Elizabeth II.
And, yeah, interesting you say a job for life. And we all know now that King Charles has now, obviously, he is the new monarch. And how's he fitting into this role, bearing in mind it's only been a couple of days?
Well, of course, I suppose one of the benefits, in a sense, brought about by the longevity of Queen Elizabeth II was that King Charles III now has had very many years, more than 70 years in probation, if you want, so as to now hopefully be particularly familiar with all of those processes, all the protocols, and he is well versed in dealing with matters within the royal realm. And he hopefully will continue those. There are huge shoes to fill, of course. Queen Elizabeth was quite iconic. But King Charles seems well placed to continue in that vein.
Yeah, it's. I agree with you. I mean, he really has had many, many years sort of, I wouldn't say shadowing, but, you know, obviously sort of seeing exactly what's done, how to do it, what protocols are, et cetera. And yeah, and the general public, I mean, what's their view on King Charles now as the new monarch? And do they instantly sort of just accept him, or, you know, does it take a while, you know, for him to gain respect?
There was great love for Queen Elizabeth II.
Yeah,
she really endeared herself to the people. And as I said, huge shoes to fill. But King Charles, the previous Prince of Wales, made his own mark and I think helped the country to realize that the monarchy also wasn't just seen as archaic. He was very big and remains very big in matters such as the environment, and he's been very involved in architecture, in art, and he's embraced a lot of passions, and it's going to be very interesting to look at the fact particularly of neutrality, which has always been central to our monarchy, because he has been quite outspoken in favor of ensuring that climate change is addressed in a significant way, amongst many other statements, and it's going to be very interesting to see to what extent he continues to embrace that or whether he takes a step back and becomes a truly central force within the country as a monarch who is not going to get drawn into politics, who's not going to opine on particular factors and situations and policies. And this remains to be seen. But I suspect that he's going to find his way quite quickly, and it's going to be a rather smooth transition.
Yeah, and he is greatly loved. I mean, I could see, obviously, when he came through, you know, when the Queen's death was announced, and he was going amongst the crowd, and everyone was sort of shaking his hand, and I think that one woman leaned over and gave him a peck on the cheek and a hug, and you can see the respect. You can see, and it's just going to be interesting to see, and you know how they take him now as a monarch. You're no longer Prince Charles. You know, he's now King Charles, and it's going to be interesting. What do you think his first or his initial challenges are in that role?
Well, of course, it's a period of great transition from one perspective, in that the monarchy hasn't changed for 70 plus years. It's all been vested in his mother, Queen Elizabeth II. So, of course, while this day has been anticipated for so many years, it's only now come to be when he himself is well into his 70s. There are going to be various practicalities that are going to be looked at, certain modernization perhaps, while still retaining the essential traditions. And I suspect it's going to take a little bit of time for that all to settle down. Of course, we have a brand new government. We have all sorts of international crises, particularly the situation in Ukraine and Russia at the moment. We have a major problem, of course, with our crisis with regard to costs in respect of energy. And this, of course, is not limited to ourselves here in the UK, but an international problem. So he's entering the realm at a very, very key stage of international politics and real politics. And it's going to be with that background that he hopefully will perhaps become a stabilizing factor and a feature that will actually help the community of this country, the community of the Commonwealth, and the world as a whole, in fact, in a certain way, to bring about perhaps a sense of positivity, confidence, belief in a better future. And we certainly hope that that will be realized in very many ways, and that he could very much be the catalyst of that.
Absolutely. And I mean, and lastly, King Charles, I mean, he has he been allowed to grieve for the loss of his mother? And this is, you know, it's something I felt as well, that he's sort of stepped into the role of king. He's now the monarch. Has he, as a son, been allowed to grieve for his mother?
When the monarch passes and a new monarch takes over, it's a very strange scenario. It's supposed to happen seamlessly. It's supposed to happen very quickly, with lots of fanfare, with much commemoration. I've been watching a lot of those commemorations over recent days, and it's been very, very interesting to watch just how much interplay he's had to have with disparate areas of communities. At the moment, he's speaking in Northern Ireland, a place that was plagued with IRA issues some decades ago, making things better, making people feel better. And yet, as you say, as a son, how much time has he had himself to grieve? Even when he was standing vigil next to his mother's coffin last night in Scotland, we noticed that people were still filing past, actually showing their respect for their deceased sovereign. And so you're quite right. We were just amazed at how much he had to pack in yesterday and today. Of course, then her coffin is moved in less than 2 hours from Northern Ireland back down here to London. There are a number of days of commemoration right through to her funeral on Monday. And yes, I suspect it will only be after that that he will actually have a true period of reflection. He was very close to his mother, his dear mama, as he called her. And it's going to be tough. It is his mother. It's the grandmother of William and Harry and many others. And it's going to take time, I think, for all of this to settle in. She's been at the helm for so very many years. And, well, as we say, should she rest in peace, and may God save the king.
Absolutely. Brendan Bearder, UK correspondent, thank you so much for your time and just chatting to us about the role of a monarch and just sort of giving us some insight into King Charles and what he's essentially stepped into, you know, trying to fill Queen Elizabeth's shoes.